Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse 1d6 damage at a time. Today on the show, we're going to be reviewing Bliss Stage, a game about robots and dreams and child sex. Also, there's some fun modern design elements in there, I guess. But again, it's mostly about robots and dreams and unfiltered child sex. See you on the other side. System Mastery. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the studio. I'm Jeff, joined, as always, by my co-host, John.
Hey, it's lovely to be here in the recording studio that we definitely have.
Oh, and now over to John for sports.
Today's a real big day for sports. We got a couple of games. Back to you.
Today's weather is going to be normal.
We got
patches of
normal weather.
Yeah.
Weather you'd expect.
Yeah, and also there's a SIG alert on the freeway.
There's one.
One SIG alert.
It's because SIG's out there.
On one freeway. We live in one of those towns where there's one freeway.
And that one freeway, jam-piggity-packed.
Yep, packed with jam-piggities.
That's right. The jam-piggity truck turned over, and now we are packed with jam-piggities.
Unfortunately, if you were planning to go to Jam Piggity's this morning for one of their famous $5 breakfasts, you just need to eat that shit off the road.
That's right. Come on down to the freeway for free Jam Piggity's.
This has gone so far off the rails, I can't remember what the rails were.
I don't even know where we are right now. The recording studio.
It's some one-horse town with a surface of Jam Piggity's.
And a recording studio.
And we're doing
that's all we got here.
We're doing the drive time radio in a town that has like 50 people in it.
Oh yeah, well, you know, we've got a recording studio and a Jam Piggity's, and that's our claim to fame.
We've also got one of them gas stations where a creepy dude warns you not to go into the hills.
Which is fair. The hills are not very good.
They're shitty.
It's just crap hills.
You go in there and he's just like, yeah, whatever you do, don't go into those hills yonder.
No one ever likes going into those hills.
A lot of bad Yelp reviews.
Just no scenery at all in those hills.
Yeah, sometimes staying on the freeway and putting up with a Jam Piggity fire is the best thing you can do.
Oh, now the Jam Piggities are on fire? Are we looking at roasted Jam Piggities?
I mean, also, why did this guy move here from Maine?
I mean, I'm not saying that this town couldn't be in Maine.
This town that we've invented. I mean, Maine is the kind of place where you could have a lot of areas that have one freeway because there's nowhere really to go. I mean, you're kind of up on a peninsula. So,
you know, where are you going to go?
I mean, that's the thing that was bothering me in that I just watched the original Pet Sematary movie, getting ready for the new one.
Uh-huh.
And where are those trucks going from and coming to at 800 miles an hour?
Well,
in rural Maine? What is going on?
I think it's because they're leaving Maine with trucks full of delicious lobster, but they gotta go fast.
They gotta go fast because of all the lobsters.
Because the lobster will go bad.
Yeah, that's true. You got me there.
They gotta go real fast. They go run real fast.
It's weird that they didn't have time to devote, in that extraordinarily shaggy film, they didn't have time to devote to mention that the trucks are full of steaming fresh lobsters from the Maine coast.
Oh, yeah, they're steaming fresh. They steamed them and then put them on a truck. They gotta get where they're going before that steam runs out, baby.
That's the plan. You let that steam run out, that's a Jam Piggity of a situation. Hey, John, what are we reviewing today?
Why, we've got Bliss Stage. It is a real... It's a real doozy of an RPG, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah, so we chose this one because it was a PDF and we needed a PDF.
But also... This is one of those ones where...
Like people keep recommending it?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of notorious, not quite on the level of, say, a Fatal or anything like that.
Yeah.
But it is definitely one that tends to come up a lot. People, you know, like you say, they've recommended it to us. It comes up in discussions about, you know, problems in games, specifically, you know, the whole... The kid boning.
I mean, there's a lot of, you know, underage But it's not like there's a government anymore, so it's not really underage.
It's not illegal. It is. Yeah, no, it's underage.
No one's stopping. Well, like, you know, maybe someone should be. I mean,
someone
still,
should be stopping this.
I don't know how.
And it's the people who wrote this RPG.
Yeah. Okay, well, to get you through the core premise, because this book's got a lot of kind of fluidity to it. It's like, hey, this is your world. You do whatever you want in it.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the strictures and things you can't fuck with at all.
Well, no, there's a lot of sort of the modern sensibilities of collaborate on what the people are, collaborate on, you know, what characters are having what relationships with anyone else, collaborate yeah. for where you set this. It's
stop, it, collaborate, and listen to the other players and what they might want you to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
because if you listen to each other's hearts,
that's
you'll find you're never too far apart, John.
That's good.
And John, if I may, I might point out to you as well that maybe love is the reason why.
Maybe that love is the reason why we've got a 5-intimacy.
Okay. Well, that would indicate that we have had sex.
That would, or we're related.
Oh, that's
we've
right.
Punched
okay,
each other.
We've punched each other and we're related. Well, that part's not true. We're not related as far as I know.
But we have had sex as far as I know.
Well, not with each other, but we've both had
we've
sex.
We've both had sex.
I mean, to be fair, when you look at that intimacy chart in the book, the had sex does not say with each other. It just says had sex.
Doesn't matter. Had sex.
off balance, doesn't matter. Okay, so yeah, the basic premise, the super basic premise. Aliens invaded about 7 years ago, exactly about 7 years ago.
Exactly about.
And what did they do?
Precisely almost 7 years ago.
They invaded via some sort of dream world called the Bliss.
That's not true at all. Quit trying to describe this book you don't know.
I know, I've just finished reading it. They invade really as well. They're in like physical space and also the dream world.
Well, the dream world isn't called Bliss.
Yeah,
Bliss
disease,
is what happens to people.
The Bliss is the disease that sends people to the dream world.
I'll take over from here.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so what happens is...
So what happens is 7 years ago, all of the adults begin to fall asleep, and anyone who falls asleep doesn't wake up.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much everyone is like under 18 at this point.
I like that it uses the American definition of adulthood, by the way, too.
Well, yeah.
It's pretty, it's like, yeah, when you turn 18, you fall asleep. Also, you got to register for selective service if you're a guy.
But you're asleep, so you can't.
Yeah.
But the main thing is this sleep is supernatural because it also means the adults don't need to eat or drink anything, and they seem very happy, which is why they call it the Bliss, because yeah. they're like, oh, it just sort of seems like they pleasantly fell asleep and are fine.
Yeah. Now, it took a while for people to figure out what the heck was going on.
Well, yeah. Because all you have are essentially children running around mm-hmm. trying to survive in a world where you got to imagine nothing works within like a month.
Yeah. So basically what happens is they all have to construct like elaborate tree houses and pie cannons and so on.
Oh, yeah. Well, they all eat imaginary food mm-hmm. and they fight pirates.
Yeah. They venerate the one with the spikiest haircut.
Yeah, that's, obviously.
Yeah, that's just
what I mean, if high school has taught me anything, that's what you do.
That's so true.
So, yeah, and then about, you know, a year into this apocalypse happening, they keep calling them aliens, though it's weird because they basically are dream creatures
mm-hmm.
because they live in the dream and
they come to me in my bed.
Ew. Only other children should do that.
Oh, you're right. I forgot.
So the aliens live in dream space and can send pretty much like killer robots that are made out of dreams into real space
mm-hmm.
to attack. So the robots come through the dream, and for about 5 years, basically, humanity gets super fucked.
Yeah, they just get terrorized by giant ball robots that unfold into murderous laser launchers or whatever.
Yeah, it's just, you know, your standard alien mecha show up and...
Well, it's all very much up to the players to describe what everything looks like in this game.
Yeah.
So, but their description is oh, it's a terrifying orb that, of fire and dream that comes out. And then,
well,
it
they're like, it could be whatever you want it to be. It could be a ring of eyes and wings like an angel from the Bible.
Yeah, but one of the examples I enjoyed was the ring, the fiery orb of dream that comes out and unfolds into a nightmare version of your favorite childhood toy.
Yes. Play-Doh. It comes out and unfolds into Play-Doh.
Water wings.
A half a slinky.
A slip and slide.
So eventually...
A bucket.
Eventually, there is the big turning point in this setting is there is an adult who doesn't succumb to the bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really said whether they never did or if it's like someone who got older during this didn't. But you have someone who has gone past the age where they should have just fallen asleep, but they are still awake and they're now the authority figure. But them and some other teenagers discover the way to essentially send the mind of a kid into the dream world, and they create a mech using their relationships with others to fight dream aliens in a dream world. But they need someone to be on the other side as an anchor to be like, hey, buddy, how you doing in there? You okay? You feeling all right? You got a good sense of direction?
So yeah, the basic premise is, first of all, your party defines what all this is. So the book's got a whole thing where the aliens are big people with no faces made up of little people with no faces, and it's just smaller and smaller people all the way down.
It's just people all the way down.
But whatever the aliens look like in their own dream world is entirely up to the players. You just ask them at the start of the game.
No, everything in this game is figured out by asking your players.
Thank goodness. I love when the game does all this good, useful work for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, it gave you this background that was like,
that makes
no
goddamn logistical sense.
Here's a weird apocalypse that happened.
Yeah.
But the actual details of what things look like, where your campaign takes place, you know, what's going on as far as, like, what does a mech look like when you make it? What does the dream look like when you go there? And so on. Is sort of up to you. The only other thing, really, that they say is that in addition to having a way in there, the thing that caused this to be possible, in addition to having an adult, was someone had finally beaten one of the dream robots.
Yes, someone took out a drone. Probably the Americans.
It's about bloody time.
Hello, dream alien boys.
Remember me? So they have basically an alien robo brain that they plug into, and that's pretty much your engine to get going.
Yeah, they call it an Anima.
Well, no, that's what the mech is.
Oh, the mech is the Anima. I thought that was also the... Is it the crash then?
Yeah, well, that's where you go into.
Yeah. You lie down in the crash, and then you go into a, you go into the dream, and then you build yourself an Anima, which is a mech boy.
Yeah, so... You build a mech based off of your relationship, so it's all...
Which is hilarious when they describe it. They're like, I'm summoning my good friend Anna, and she becomes a particle beam cannon.
Yeah, it's...
My father is a jetpack.
It's super weird, but I kind of love it that they're like, oh no, you have to rely on the strengths of your relationship. Like, it's very anime in that. They're oh yeah, the strengths of your relationships become your armor, but you have to describe what each one is.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got, like, a ton of relationships, you have to be like, all right, so my left missile pod is my grandpa, my right missile pod is Jim, and I got rocket boots, and those are Billy.
the top half of me is my real friends. The bottom half of me is, like, my high school friends.
I got a butt plate, and that's Mike
Facebook.
Gross. Mike Gross is the butt plate. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, because
you hit that dude with a skateboard.
I hit him with a skateboard. I think you just punched him or something.
Oh, I threw him off of those like dome.
That's right. Yeah,
things
yeah.
And broke his leg.
Jeez, what do you know? I got him worse than you. You got him worse than I did.
Oh yeah, You got to imagine if he was like, ah, finally, now it's been many years and I can get back to my bullying ways. And then someone just danked him upside the head with a skateboard. And he's like, no, my comeuppance.
Poor bastard.
My petard.
It makes us sound like assholes to tell this story, by the way.
Oh, no, I was 100% an asshole there. Now, I mean, it's one thing to be like, oh, well, he always bullied me. I'm like, my dude, I was in first grade. I should not be throwing a guy off of, like, fucking monkey bars in first grade.
Yeah, and all I did was overreact to getting punched by when I was passing a fight in progress.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, fuck you, buddy. And then I hit him with a skate. He probably just thought I was part of the fight.
Part of it.
Yeah, well, I was then.
This game then takes place. It's been 7 years, and you are in the group that has this anima capability.
It's implied that there may be other groups around the world that are doing the same thing.
It's possible, but you're basically the only one you know of.
Yeah, it's supposed to be that if you go out into the world, most of the time you're in like this base where they help provide you with food and shelter and stuff in exchange for you being willing to go into this dream world and fight nightmare aliens.
And the rest of it is just roving bands of child gangs.
Yeah, apparently that happened. It's all just kids. The movie Kids. That has taken place.
It's all just
Spring Breakers are running around.
All these damn Spring Breakers.
Yeah, the whole world is just whatever Harmony Korine thinks, and then you have to stay in a special, like, you know, secret subway tunnel.
Yeah, it's weird because the rest of it is Spring Breakers, and then you're in fucking like Neon Genesis.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Okay, so your characters aren't characters per se. You actually play as a whole selection of the various group of children that you represent.
Yeah, that's an interesting decision in here, in that when you start, they say you're going to want to have about 10 to 13 characters.
Mm-hmm.
Every player should get a pilot, and no more than one, but every player should have one pilot.
Yes.
And generally, every player should have one anchor that they control.
But you can't have the same. You can't have an anchor to your pilot.
Yeah, you can't be the anchor for your own pilot.
Yeah, because that'd just be whacking off if you were playing the game.
Yeah. So you get that, and then essentially, if there's anything left over after that, so if you've got, say, three players, then you're looking at about 4 to 7 more characters to just kind of flesh out the base.
You just grab them and control them when it's like when they show up in various like talk segments. Also, the GM of the game is basically just another player. The big difference is that they control the person in the group called the authority figure.
Yeah, they're the adult.
Who, again, is an adult who has just not gone to sleep because there's a sentence in there where it's like they just says, oh, well, they've just found a way to resist sleep. And I'm like, did they do that? Are they just not resisting the bliss? What's the specific situation? Because you can't sleep for, which, by the way, 7 years have gone by. You can't just not sleep for 7 years. I mean, yeah. John's tried it.
By God, I have tried my best. But, I think this is, again, it's left up to you what you want it to be. But I feel like the best way is to say, this is some adult that's immune to bliss.
Yeah. And so now he's got his own little
it's
child
It's just
army.
Like me, an adult immune to bliss.
He's just this dude with a child army sending robot dream warriors that he'll never be able to experience himself.
No, because only teenagers can go in here. So you can't be 12 or younger or 20 or above.
It's weird how once again, how this dream sequence robot initialized thing that they pulled out of the drone of an alien dream machine recognizes specifically the teenage moray ages of North America.
Yeah. Well, it's just
in the 20th century as well.
That's it. When you hit that 13th birthday, the dream just kind of goes, yeah, sure, buddy. Come on in.
Ooh, hey, you're in our target demographic now. Buy all these Beyblades.
You got to wonder if you're one of those kids that's born on like February 29th.
Oh, yeah. So it's like you're actually 3 or whatever.
You're like a leap year kid.
Yeah.
That's the authority figure. They're like, hey, look, I'm technically only like 12. So, you know.
And he's actually 48.
Yeah, it's great. I would love that.
Hey, you kids, keep fucking. I need more kids.
Hey, you kids, you keep doing what you're doing. I like that.
Eat them cockroaches and fight them aliens. Huh?
That's what we need.
I'm 12 years old, I is.
I can't even pilot one of these things
yet.
Yeah,
if I was playing this, that'd be my, when I have to define the alien, to be like, oh, they're marketers, and they are specifically interested in the 13 to 17 demographic and not interested in anything else.
Yeah, they just shut down every other market, and they're like, look, this is what we're doing.
Welcome to our dream world. Purchase these Micro Machine play sets.
We have so much Lego to show you.
What do you see in there? It's nothing but like advanced Legos for teenagers. It's all Technics and Bionicle. It's insane in here.
Oh my God.
That one's got a working engine.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yeah, you create about 10 to 13 people, and then you really define the relationships with them based solely on the pilot character.
Yeah.
As much as the game says, like, oh, you're playing all of these various characters, no one has any single character, your pilot is pretty much your character, and then the rest of them is just stuff you get to do instead of the GM doing everything.
Yeah, it's just NPCs that you share terms with, although I think you probably get a lot of play time in as anchors. So your pilot has a couple of core stats that aren't, but even then, they're still basically derived by relationship.
Yeah, you don't really have stats in this. Everything is just relationship-based. So you have pretty much two things that you work on to begin with. Every pilot has an archetype. So you'll pick, like,
Eager cadet.
Yeah, I'm the 13-year-old new cadet.
Yeah.
All the way up to, I'm the 17-year-old seasoned vet who's seen too much shit.
Yeah, and is just about ready to die.
And you pick whatever you are, and most of them have some little benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's...
It's always got to do with dice manipulation, basically.
Well, it's usually based on relationships for, like, okay, you start out with two stats of intimacy and trust for any given relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you a list. So it's like you have one relationship that gets to start at 4 intimacy and 1 trust. You have one relationship that starts at 2 and 2, and one that starts at 1 and 3.
So you have to write that down, and through, you just list out the people that live in your neighborhood.
Yeah, you just fill in the blank. So you're like, all right, my anchor is a 2 intimacy, 3 trust. Okay, I'll put that in that slot.
Yeah.
All right, and then we decided that my little sister is here, so she'll go into like the 1 intimacy, 4 trust, but because she's my sister, I get plus 1 intimacy.
Yeah,
because
of blood relations, so she becomes a 2-4. So all you're doing is writing down these relationships and then highlighting them to a little like list of options for the two numbers that always just add up to 5.
And so certain ones will have things like, oh, if you are like a certain type, you'll have, your benefit might be you just get a powerful relationship to start with. Like, ooh, you start with, since everything goes up to 5, it's like you start with a relationship that's 5 intimacy and 3 trust. It's super good. So like, okay, great. That's your power.
Yeah.
Some people get like a bonus plus 1 to like choose a couple things. You get bonus intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Some get bonus trust. The worst one is the seasoned veteran, where it's just choose 2 relationships. They're broken. Also, you have 1 trauma, and you're like, oh, this is all just bad stuff. Why would anyone pick this? This is garbage.
This is the running undercurrent of this game, is that it consistently expects that you're going to voluntarily fuck yourself over for the story.
Yeah, we'll get there when
there's
we
a
get
lot
to the
more
mechanics.
It's just a running theme throughout the course of the game.
Yeah,
notice that the game kind of goes, hey, if you want, you can play as a dumb, broken, mean piece of shit. What's the benefit of that? Oh, there isn't one. It's just bad.
Oh, no. It's just, if you wanted to play that character, you could do it and be worse. And you're like, okay.
Yeah. So there's also special types of anchors when you're playing as anchors.
Yeah. They all have a power based on rerolling dice.
Yes.
So
this gets so hard to explain in the middle.
Well, all of the anchors are just, you fill in the name of whoever.
Oh, I forgot about that. It's not whoever, is it, John? I had a highlighter on my PDF for this one.
Oh, I know.
And to pick the names for your anchors, you're supposed to go through and pick the unrequited crushes that you had on people in middle school and write their names down.
Yeah, and I do like that it specifically says, hey, don't use the name of anyone that you are still in contact with. That would be real fucking creepy.
Yeah, not like this isn't already real fucking creepy, but sure, whatever.
Eh. I mean, at least that's like, here's a way you can generate a name without really having to worry about it.
Yeah, well, you know, screw you, game. All my crushes were requited. I got my shit going on in school.
Oh, I didn't. I'd be like, oh, well, I guess here's Veronica then.
You probably knew in high school, what, like 2 girls total?
I mean, in high school.
Yeah, because you went to...
talking about fucking grade school, baby. Yeah.
What if all of your unrequited crushes were just girls named Veronica?
All of them.
Like, just a huge, yeah, a huge thing. There was Archie Comics.
I mean, I'm going to say there was a list of like 3 Stephanies in a row. And I was like, what is it with me and Stephanies? What's going on here?
You're just like, I got my first anchor's named Stephanie. My second anchor's named Stephanie. My third anchor's named Thomas. That was a weird part of my life.
And that was an experimental bit of me. Yeah. But, you know, we'll move on. Fourth anchor is Stephanie.
So, name your anchors after your unrequited crushes from school that you don't have contact with anymore.
And then you pick basically a descriptor, and that's their power. So you could be, they could be kind or persistent or whatever it is, and that gives them the ability to reroll dice when you assign them to a thing. Now, the game uses fudge dice its thing. Yeah. So it'll be like, oh, if you, some of it will be, you can assign, like, you can reroll dice that have been assigned to your relationship or reroll dice that have been assigned to the pilot's safety, or they all have their own, like, categories that they're good at reassigning.
Yes. So when you get the list of anchors, they list them with their own names. They'll be like Jenny the Resilient and so on, with a little warning at the top in all caps. It's like, do not use these names.
I don't know why we did, but please don't use them.
Don't use these names. Remember, you have to use the names of unrequited middle school crushes. I was like, that's a weird thing to demand.
I demand it.
I will check.
I will do this.
Anyway, there's maybe 6 kinds of anchors. They're just, you know, resilient, kind, brave, that daredevil, that kind of thing. They all have a reroll feature. The rest of the characters you'll play as are just random, arbitrary kids that are just running around in your facility.
Yeah,
they don't need any stats, but their relationship to you.
Yeah, it says that.
Or your pilot.
They can, you know, be either perspective ones that are like, oh, I'm 12 and I want to be a pilot, so they could be up and coming.
Mm-hmm.
It could be that they're like doing farming, it says.
Yeah.
Although,
who's going outside? The whole point is you have to stay in these like thick buildings so that you're.
Oh, yeah, these thick buildings.
Thick with 2C buildings.
And.
But so that you don't get noticed by the dream police.
But the. I mean. It seems weird that they have this idea that for some reason kids would have gotten together and rediscovered agriculture for some reason, which, I mean, we've discussed this. That's not what happens.
No, there's this whole thing where it's like, how do you get food in this world? Ask yourselves and your players that question. All of you sit down and have a frank conversation about what everyone's eating. Are they eating cockroaches and bugs? Have they found a grocery store where they can loot cans 7 years down the line? You know, where there's still a huge population of kids here in the city you're in? Is that what you found? And there's never a point where it goes, are you eating sleeping people?
Did you just go up to these adults that are just preserved?
Yeah.
Like, they don't need to eat or drink or do anything. They just sort of are in sleep stasis.
Yeah.
And you got to imagine at some point some kid's just like, well, they're right there. Come on.
I mean, look, it's just a five-leg or five-part hot dog. I can just eat this thing. It's not like he's ever going to wake up.
I mean, I guess it would be if you were in, like, the Midwest somewhere, and you're like, nah, man, we got cows aplenty.
Yeah, for sure you got cows aplenty for, like, one generation of cows. And then they all die off because no one's taking care of them because cows are pretty engineered to be stupid meat beasts.
Same.
Yeah, it's just everything where they're like, oh, yeah, we should set up a base near a hospital because they'll have a generator. And I'm like, 7 years down the line, the fuck they will.
Yeah, there's a lot of assumptions that this game has about the way the world is going to work that does it play out, given that they've had a 7-year gap?
Yeah, the 7-year gap is a little much.
If it had been like a 1-year gap, I'd go, okay, you can still find, you know, canned goods that are okay to eat. You can take care of, like, getting gas for stuff from things.
Yeah, you can go loot it from gas stations or whatever. But 7 years down the line, there's been a lot of looting.
There's been a lot of looting and
power grabs.
You know, people that are going into grocery stores and being like, ooh, food, and it's been 5 years and they just get like horrible stomach flu and
then
die.
Yeah, they're getting dysentery off that canned shit. And then the book never once goes, by the way, you're probably just going to be eating sleeping people.
You're probably just eating folk.
Yeah, I mean, because it's so obvious and it doesn't even get raised as a concept. And are we the gross ones here, John? I mean, we're reading a book where there's a huge contrived world scenario to engender a situation where players have to describe two 13-year-olds fucking. And are we the weird ones for being like, how come they're not cannibals?
Am I the asshole
Who's
here?
Who's the I don't understand. Like,
that's the perfect renewable resource that takes none of your resources to keep going. Because you'd look at it and go like, oh, we could try and raise livestock, but then they would be eating food that we might be eating. And we could try and do some agriculture, but we're like 12. What the fuck do we know about that?
Here's the question I have, John. And this is a weird question, and I want you to bear out with me.
Okay, I'm ready to go on a journey
with you. Let's go on a journey. Are the sleeping people still farting?
I have to imagine the answer is no.
Yeah, see, that's a disappointment, because if they're still farting, you could harness the methane. You could have a whole empire running on collecting the gas of sleeping people.
Now, if they're still breathing, though,
that's true. You could use that to power windmills and
stuff. Yeah, I was going
to
say, you set up just a ton of little generators going off of breath.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's pretty much the only thing you... Because at this point, you're looking at humans as a source of energy. This is the Matrix, except
for... Oh, yeah, I was going to say, at this point, you just start going like, all right, how many... Like, adults can we stack up and get going in one place?
How much electrical charge do they generate? Because in the Matrix, the problem was that it will always take more food to generate the amount of electricity they'll charge out.
You got to shove in more energy than you're getting out.
Yeah, but if these guys don't eat or drink at all, and they're perfectly healthy all the time, which means you can take their electrical charge and use it to power things. I mean, to me, this whole game, they make it about, like, fighting robots or fighting aliens in a dream world and you know, teenage fucking. But realistically, it's about organizing and collecting as many sleeping adults as you can.
It's the Pokemon of sleeping adults.
And trying to come up with creative ways to use them where you don't necessarily kill them.
Just turning average human adults into potato clocks that are equally as delicious.
Yeah, and all you don't need to eat them if you want to keep your supply. Although the question of can you feed them can you feed them and get fertilizer later? Are they pooping?
That's a good question.
There's so
many
questions.
And one that the book never answers.
What
if I put an IV into a sleeping adult and I start putting nutrients into them, what's happening? Are they just gone?
Are they doubling down on the nutrients? What happens if I intentionally infect one with a tapeworm? Does the tapeworm find enough free food inside this free food human?
Or does it just die because the only thing keeping them alive is the bliss?
Yeah. There's so many questions about sleeping people, and they just breeze right past it because it's the true essence of the story is eventually your teenagers are going to have to fight so hard they fuck.
See, now this is where
you and I disagree
because there is a certain issue with this in that...
Oh, God, a certain issue. Please continue.
Okay. In this game, there is the chart for intimacy 1 through 5, trust 1 through 5, and everything like that.
Right.
Now, intimacy 1 through 5, they have a little chart where it says, like, this is sort of what you should be looking at as far as how intimate you've gotten with someone to be where you are at intimacy level. So intimacy 1 is basically just you've seen this person and you know their name.
Yeah, it's like, literally set up the way bases are set up when it comes to childhood talk.
So after that, it's all right, you know, you've actually touched this person, you know who they are, you have some sort of relationship with them, and it goes up to like kissing.
Yeah, above the bra, under the shirt.
But it also has antagonistic versions of that. So it could be like you get into a shouting match with someone. Yeah. Intimacy 4 is you straight up come to blows with somebody else. So intimacy isn't just romantic intimacy. It is how close and how powerful your emotions are with someone, except when it hits level 5. And then the only thing it says is level 5 is have sex.
Yeah, which is weird because, you know, I just finished rewatching Fight Club the other day, and those guys love each other to a crazy degree because of how much time they spend fighting.
Now, that's all Intimacy 4, baby.
Yeah, that's as far as those guys can get. Although I guess you could probably argue that Tyler Durden and what's-his-face are blood relatives because they're the same guy.
Yeah.
I guess. So they might be Intimacy 5 with each other.
Yeah.
But there's no way that anyone's in Intimacy 5 with Meatloaf in that movie. Boy, that movie does not hold up under an analysis for like toxic masculinity is. I'll tell you that, right? It's just like, yeah, the important thing for men is fucking fighting. Fighting's the only thing that matters. You're like, I don't like this conceptually. You're very wrong.
Well, you shouldn't like it.
Oh, okay. So,
there's
the intimacy chart.
Which is a problem. And the one thing that I will say that's very bad about this is... there is this section where it says like, oh yeah, if you're a blood relative, then you get +1 on the intimacy. And then it says the chart tops at 5. You do not get a bonus for incest. And I was like, you didn't need to say that.
That's one of those warning labels where, you know, there's a gross story.
You know, someone at the table was like, yeah, but what if I fuck my sister? Can I go to intimacy 6? And he's like, no.
For Christ's sake. No, quit trying to be Fenris from the X-Men. Or I guess, no, wait, who's the actual one, the couple that's...
Quicksilver
and Scarlet Witch and the Ultimates. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, you think that's the grossest thing in this book? I would say it's probably the pregnancy section. Did you read the pregnancy section?
It just says that you... I mean, well, okay. So you have a starting base, I think it's 2-2 or 3-3.
If you're the mom, it's 3-3. If you're the dad, it's 2-2. If you're not related to the child that's still in the womb, it's a 1-1.
Yeah, everyone's got a 1-1 relationship with an unborn baby.
The father gets his bonus to intimacy and trust because he's a blood relative of the baby, which puts it to 2-2. The mom gets a further bonus that's just a special new event that's happening here in the game to put her up to 3-3. If she loses trust with the baby in her womb, that is what causes miscarriages in this game.
Yeah. And you might be asking, how does a baby lose trust with its mother?
Not a baby, John, a fetus.
Yeah.
I guess my fault for saying baby first, but this is, I mean, it's not like you're getting in arguments with it. It's in you still.
Yeah. Now, the only way that would happen is essentially through, we may as well get to the mechanical part of this, is when you go on a mission and you build your mech, basically you would have to gamble your relationship with your baby and put it as part of your mech to the point where, like, my relationship with my baby got shot off of me.
I mean, you could also be constantly getting in fights with your baby because you could be punching your stomach.
Just punching that baby. Which, I mean, yeah, you're going to have a miscarriage.
But here's the thing. I mean, I'm not just talking about the inherent mechanical absurdity of it. That's cruel. It's cruelty to suggest that the reason miscarriages happen is because you didn't trust your fetus enough.
Now, to be fair, it doesn't say this is why it happens. It just says it will happen if this occurs. So it's not this is the only means in which this happens, just that should it happen, then a miscarriage.
There's no earthly way where it's okay to suggest to an audience that might include women who have experienced miscarriages in their life that it could have been because their baby lost trust in them while they were still pregnant. It's not good.
Yeah, and I mean, I understand the idea that they were going for as far as like, oh, you decided to go into the dream world and pilot a mech while you were pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And that caused you to have a miscarriage because you turned your love of your baby into a missile launcher and then an alien shot it? Like, that's weird. And I understand that they were like, ooh, this is a thing that could happen if you break your relationship with that, with this weird dream logic. But, I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. You're definitely right. Don't put weird pregnancy miscarriage rules in your game about, like, super anime teenagers fighting mech battles against dream aliens.
I mean, notably, there is no other way that a baby can miscarry could be miscarried in the rules of this game.
Yes.
There's no, like, also roll a d6 on a minus, your baby miscarries. There's none of that. So this, in this game, diegetically, this is the only way that miscarriages happen.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what you actually do in this, because it's a lot of freeform RP with player led, like, there are different phases of the game. The primary one is the mission phase, where you go into an anima and you have goals that you need to accomplish, and your anchor describes things. Like the sensor readouts they're getting on what you're doing while you're wandering around as the pilot in a mech. And then the other players are just throwing shit at the walls at you the whole time, too.
Well, like, it starts with a briefing action, And that's the point where the GM gives you what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. As the authority figure, he calls everyone into a room.
And he's like, this is your mission.
Yeah.
And they can decide whatever it is. Now, when you start the game, you create hopes for your squad.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have hopes that are like, we want to create a new generation that will, you know, be able to survive in this bullshit apocalypse, find out why people are asleep, or we want to beat up the aliens, whatever it is.
It's notable that their example group takes the two most obvious possible hopes and runs with them for their entire example discussion, which is, we want to end the alien menace, and we want to start a new civilization.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would take find a cure for the bliss as probably mine. So
I mean,
you can...
sure, if you want to stop your constant source of free sleeping people.
Oh, man, my giant battery of adults woke up. How sad for me.
Yeah, that's a sad situation. If you do that before you solve the alien invasion, they'll either just restart the bliss or they'll just show up in their giant death toys and murder them again. You can't,
Laser-eyed Teddy Ruxpin is coming for me.
I love that the assumption is that your favorite toy as a child was probably some kind of action figure, either a doll if you're a girl or a transformer if you're a boy, right? Because they're like, oh, it turns into your favorite childhood toy. You're like, what, like a bucket? Like, I really liked my boogie board.
I really liked this bucket.
I was significantly way
also, I was a walrus as a child.
my bucket.
They be taking my bucket.
Oh, it kills me so much that that's a northern elephant seal and not a walrus.
Hi,
I'm Mr. Pedantry.
I mean, technically, there was follow-up ones where a walrus was actually.
Fair enough. That's
to be fair.
To be very fair.
To be even more pedantic about memes.
Further down the rabbit hole, John. So
you get your briefing action.
Yeah, they tell you what's going to happen, and you can choose to not do it. As a pilot, you can be like, no. But then you lose trust for no reason.
The whole thing is the GM will pick someone. He'll be like, either he says, does anyone want to volunteer? Or he says, like, all right, Jimmy, you gotta do it. You're the man now, dog.
You gotta go on a mission to cross that dream bridge and check what's on the other dream side. And Jimmy will be either be like, yes, boss, or no.
If you say
no, you just damage your relationship with the authority figure, which kicks off another what they call interlude segments. But we'll get to that later. It's just one more chance to fuck yourself over for fun.
So, assuming that your pilot and anchor go through with whatever, you do your mission, and it's very interesting in the way that this is set up, because whoever is playing the anchor essentially becomes what you would standard think of as a GM, because they describe everything that's happening. Like, they're the ones who say, hey, I'm getting readings, I see that there's whatever in front of you, or, oh, there's a bridge and it's whatever, and you've got levels of control.
Yeah, it's very collaborative improv in style. Like, it'd be, if John was going in as a pilot, I'd be like, all right, John, you're now in the dream world. The bridge should be out in front of you. I want you to slowly open your eyes and tell me what you see.
I see a bridge.
No, you see penises. So many penises.
Oh, is it a bridge of penises?
It's a bridge on the river penis.
Oh, it's a river penis.
Yeah. But, like, that's the way, and then someone else would be like, and the penises are on fire.
Now, that's only if you've lost control.
Yeah.
Because there are usually multiple steps to whatever your mission is. So it'll be like, all right, I've got three goals. I need to cross the bridge, get into the alien base, and blow up the alien base.
Yeah.
So you've got to accomplish all three of those for the mission to be a success. And each time you try to accomplish one of them, you roll dice equal to the intimacy of all of the things that you were using.
Yeah, yeah. And the total intimacy of all of the various relationships you're currently using to create your anima.
And as well, you can get a bonus for certain things if stuff has gone wrong recently. Like, you can get dice for trauma or dice for...
But trauma is also how the DM, the GM, messes with you in this situation.
Yeah. So you'll roll these dice, and like we said, they're fate dice. So you'll get your pluses, blanks, and minuses.
And equal signs.
Yeah, this book was not well edited. At some point, they just gave up on a holding down shift, I guess.
I mean, the minus and the equals are next to each other on a common keyboard. It's just, I think it's just that he fucked up.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, so every time they show a display of rolls, it'll be like plus, 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 zero, 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 minus, minus, equals, 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 equals. And you're like, what are those? What weird, are you wearing eight-sided fudge dice? What are we doing right now?
So you assign dice to things, and you only assign one unless the DM is fucking with you. So you want a plus to go into anything. So if you do that, it basically means whatever the thing you assigned it to is safe. So if you put a plus in your mission success,
mm-hmm.
then you succeed at the goal. If you put a plus in pilot safety, then you don't take any damage and
trauma.
And there's, you know, stuff for your relationship. So the various people that you are using can be damaged, but a plus means they won't be. And you've got one for your anchor and so on.
Yeah.
Now, if you put a plus in there, they're fine. They're great. Everything's wonderful. If you put a zero or a blank in there, then it ends up being that you have usually a small penalty. So it'll be like, oh, you're a little stressed out. You'll take like one stress on a relationship, or maybe if it's your own safety, you'll be a little bit like traumatized. You'll get terror or something.
Yeah.
And then if you do it for the mission goal, it just means you didn't further that goal and you can try again.
Yes.
Now, if the DM is messing with you, usually because of trauma, they can pick areas and say, oh, this one is like a particularly difficult one right now. You have to assign two dice and take the worst.
Yeah. Which means 9 times out of 10, it's going to end up having to be a zero because you just don't have enough pluses to get these things accomplished. There's even a way to assign 3 dice and take the worst. But basically, this is where it introduces the stats that they didn't mention during character creation. First one is trauma. A character, only pilots experience trauma. And trauma is basically a combination of physical wounds, mental wounds, overstress, that will eventually lead to your character being unviable as a pilot. For each point of trauma you have, your DM can use it to mess with you and force you to, or GM can force you to assign more dice to things or cause you to force you to use minus dice in certain areas. And when your character passes 6 trauma, they immediately take their last action ever.
It could be that they die heroically, they quit and run away, whatever it is, it's essentially this character is out of the game and you always get to decide what it is as the player.
Yes.
Like, you can say, oh no, I do this and that's how I go out.
Yeah,
like, and usually it's I accomplish some hope we have.
It's either you accomplish a hope or you take a hope from the list of hopes and scratch it off and no one can accomplish that hope now. So you can either take a hope away from everyone else or accomplish any one of the other hopes if you can describe it. The example they use is a character for those 2 hopes that they use, but the one for the person who's dying heroically in combat is she kills the alien menace completely. She just goes, okay, I dive into the brain of the alien super menace and end them.
Yeah, there's like a giant monster made out of aliens and she goes into the heart of it and like self-destructs.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the length, the strength of the amount of power you get from this trauma 6 effectively ending your character thing is you get to narrate whatever you want and no one at the table can say anything other than great. So she goes like, I end the campaign. The aliens are all dead now. And they're all like, wow, cool. And that's how that ended.
Yeah. The whole trauma thing, I mean, it will take you a while because you need to. The way everything essentially works in this is when you reach a certain threshold of a negative modifier, you either lose something or gain something, whether it's gaining trauma or losing trust. Yeah. So with relationships, if you happen to put a blank or a negative in that while you're in the anima, you can get stress.
Yeah.
If stress is ever higher than trust, then your stress gets wiped to 0 and you lose 1 trust.
Yep.
So if your trust ever drops to 0, the relationship is broken and everyone that is in that relationship takes a number of bliss equal to, I think it's three times the intimacy.
Yep, three times the current intimacy. Additionally, what was the other part of it? It immediately causes harm to the anchor. Anchors only have that one kind of tracking stat, harm. They're either harmed or they're not.
And pilots can be harmed. Other people can be harmed.
If an anchor gets harmed and then harmed again, that kills them.
Yeah, you can have one level of harm.
Yeah.
And if the harm goes away, great. If you stack another harm, they die.
So if you're wondering how all these stresses and traumas and harms are resolved, every time a mission action is over, you're supposed to spend about the next three actions doing interludes, which are interpersonal conversations between two people, which you never know who's controlling them, but it should always be at least two players. So and in general, not there's an exception to it, but in general, there should always be a pirate present or pirate.
There
should always be a pirate present.
Just in the arr. Background. Arr, you are a pirate.
Indeed. Parlay the two of you.
Just imagining like 2 15-year-olds sitting there going like, the world is ending, but I love you so much. And then in the background, just very quietly.
Yar, har, fiddle-dee-dee, being a pirate is always with me.
It's me 80th birthday. I'm 80. Just that kind of crap. No, a pilot should always be present with one key exception. What happens in these is that two characters basically have a Final Fantasy-style cutscene where they talk to each other against a backdrop of other things happening, and then they can choose one from a variety of effects. They can reduce trauma, they can reduce harm, or John's pointing at me, he wants to say something.
Well, the problem is they don't get to choose.
That's true.
Because when you start an interlude, you have the two people that are having the scene, and one person is picked as a judge.
Not one of those two people.
Yeah. So, and it doesn't have to be the GM. Anyone can get picked as a judge. And so these two people will just have a scene.
Mm-hmm.
They'll talk, stuff will happen, and at the end of it, the judge says, oh, this is what you get. Like, based on how the conversation went, they can say, oh, that was stress relief, so all the stress in that relationship is gone, or this was a trust building.
Yeah, or you just built intimacy, or you just removed harm, that kind of thing. But they do ask the players, the players specifically and not the judge, at the end of any one of these interludes, does anyone feel like their trust was broken? And you can say, yes, my trust was broken during that conversation, in which case you reduce the trust of the relationship between the two people by one, and that's all that happens.
Yeah, you don't get a bonus for it, and all it does is fuck over the pilot, essentially.
Yep.
And at that point, I'm looking at it going like, okay, so the only one who should ever say, yes, my trust was broken, is the person who isn't playing the pilot. But at that point, you've created a dangerous precedent where literally anytime someone's like, oh, and now we'll have an interlude, they're like, great, I'll have an interlude with you. Hey, you're a fuckwad. My trust was broken.
I'm the one who declared it, too. What an asshole move that would be. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer that it's like, well, I guess, because their example is conversations going wrong constantly.
Well, yeah, they're like, oh, yeah, and then someone, like a pilot, comes out and talks to their anchor who's super stressed out, and they're not at a party right now.
Yeah.
And they talk to them and then are just an asshole and leave?
Well, yeah, what happens is the pilot goes outside the party and sees her anchor sitting there and looking sad, and she's like, what's wrong? And she's like, I'm just so stressed out by all this situation. And she's like, well, you should be more willing to accept my love for you. I don't want to talk about that right now. Why not? I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. And then they run off. And the person who had to hear all that was like, I think my trust is broken.
Yeah, it's just, all of it is very dumb.
And then it cuts to the second example, which is two dudes picking over ruins. One of them is complaining about how he doesn't like his girlfriend very much, and the other one white knights the girlfriend and punches him.
Yeah, he's like, ah, this chick I'm banging, she keeps going like, hey, what about love? And I'm like, baby, this is just sex, you know what I mean? Hey, bada bing, bada boom.
Yeah.
I'm a 14-year-old Andrew Dice Clay.
And then he doesn't realize that the other guy is a 14-year-old, regular 14-year-old. He's like, the honor of a female!
How dare you! And they go fisticuffs, and they gain intimacy because they've just fought.
Yeah.
But they don't lose any trust because neither of them is like, ah, we didn't betray our trust. Neither of us actually gives a shit about the other one, so it wasn't like our trust was betrayed to begin with.
Yeah. So that's, you're supposed to string three of those together before starting up another briefing action.
Any pilot who goes on a mission can, at any point in time, before a new mission, say, point of order, I would like to have an interlude.
Yes. So this, the whole thing is described as like a string of pearls style scenario. You get a briefing action, a mission action, interlude, 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 pilot interlude, final interlude if someone dies, mission action, and so on. It's all done vignette style.
Yeah, and the way that it's set up feels very one-shot or short campaign.
Very much so. Although there's a lot of advice towards the back of the book for how to run it as short campaigns, which is weird because I'm like, I feel like that's the only way to run this.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about, like, oh, if you're planning on doing a long campaign, maybe look at this or that or whatever. I'm going, man, if you're doing a long campaign, you're probably doing a lot of character switching is what's happening.
I assume so, yeah. That you're bringing, because there's even an action reward structure for bringing in new faces, where while you're in the dream, you find someone else and drag them in with you.
And there's things where, like I had said earlier, where you can train a new pilot or train a new anchor,
yeah.
So you'll have like someone step up into a new role.
So yeah, people are dying constantly. So it's basically a war of attrition type game, and that's supposed to be the point of it. That no one lives forever, no one can escape the bliss forever. Eventually, your bliss gets too high. Your bliss ranges, by the way, between 13 and 108, perfect numbers.
If you go above 108, you also get a final action in the same way that you would if you had reached too much trauma. But with this one, you have a few different options of, oh, how am I going to take myself out of this campaign? Or the final option of saying, I become the new authority figure.
That's weird, because the whole point of the authority figures is that they have resisted bliss so that they don't fall asleep.
Exactly, and that's the thing, is you're saying, okay, I have so much bliss now, and I should have fallen asleep. Like, I'm an 18-year-old.
I guess I didn't. Yeah, okay.
And I don't. And so now I'm the new authority figure, and I'm the commissar. And it doesn't say what happens to the old authority figure.
Yeah,
like,
you can't have more than one. There's no adult fucking in this world, John. None whatsoever.
Well, I mean,
except
be.
For the sleeping people.
Yeah. I mean, or you could just pose the sleeping people to be fucking.
Or you could just fuck the sleeping people. I mean,
yeah,
you're already eating them at this at a certain
you
point.
You might as well do both at the yeah. same time.
I mean, once again, John, am I the asshole?
I mean, now you are. Yes, obviously. Yeah,
that one did cross the line. Eating them was okay.
Eating was okay.
Yeah.
Fucking a dead person. Well, not dead. Not
well,
quite
I mean,
dead.
once they're more or less half eaten, yeah.
I mean, once you've eaten their arm, you're basically free to go to town on them.
But only in the arm stump, sir.
Only arm stuff.
Only arm and hand stuff.
Only Army Hammer stuff.
Well, if you can find Army Hammer, he's almost definitely asleep somewhere.
Yeah.
So, sorry about all that. You know, but yeah, that's basically the way the game plays. There's a million exceptions for... a million different things. It kind of drags on in the middle because it's all just relationship exceptions and minor like corner case rulings and so on. And then you get to the end and there's a DM section that's got all kinds of advice that you normally wouldn't see in these books, like how to do short campaigns, how to include a guest character for one session.
What happens if one of your players is gone for a session or several sessions?
Yeah, they're actually pretty smart bits of advice. So that's nice. I mean, ultimately, you never get around to quite the fact that this game is a huge contrived reason for children to have sex with each other.
Now,
I know.
I'm going to go ahead and bring this up. And yeah, this is a thing that I have been thinking for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So this game, both the way that Jeff described it as being an excuse for kids fucking, and pretty much any time I see it come up online, that's the only thing that gets talked about is they're like, oh, this is a game about, like, teenagers having sex.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is sort of rightfully going like, ew, that's not a good game. But then there's Monster Hearts, which is a tabletop RPG darling, which is literally entirely about teenagers having sex. There are sex moves that you do, and nobody's like, ew, that's gross.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's just kind of like, oh, that's so deep and amazing.
So you're trying to catch me out on this one? Is that
no,
what's
I'm not trying to catch
is,
you out on it. I'm trying happening? To understand what is it about something like Monster Hearts.
You're trying to point out that I live in a society?
Yes, what I'm saying is...
I am very intelligent.
You wish to improve things, and yet you live in society. Interesting. What I'm asking is, what is it about Monster Hearts versus something like Bliss Stage where the concept of, you know, essentially kids, teenagers, having sex in one instance is considered super awful and gross, and in the other instance is considered to be this emotionally deep experience.
It's the veil of metaphor. In this this is my real answer for you. I mean, yes, technically you can play Monster Hearts in such a fashion that your characters are just constantly boning down and learning life lessons about it, and it's basically Monster Prom the RPG. That's and that's acceptable, and if you want to run it that way. But there's a few things about Monster Hearts that are different than this game. In Monster Hearts, you don't have to bone to save society. You can bone for your own reasons.
Well, you don't have to bone to save society in Bliss Stage either. You have to pilot to save society.
I mean, you kind of have to do both. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff. There's a section towards the back of this book, John, and I don't mean to go off on too huge of a tangent, but there's a section in the back of this book that is horrifying. It's the what's it like to be a pilot, what's it like to be an anchor bit. It's terrifying. The pilot one is completely full of it's important to foster the next generation because I won't see the end of this, but maybe they will kind of stuff, like where it's like I'm just another cog in the machine. I'm going to die, and that's the way it is. Every time I jack into the dream matrix, it could be my last time. And the anchor one's even worse because the anchor one's like they make you fall in love with them. The pilots make you fall in love with them so you have the power to go on. And when you look into the black reflection of the crash machine, you see their love echoing back at you, but you can also see their love for other people. And it hurts so bad. It hurts so bad. And when they die, all that's left is the thudding of your empty heart. And then they introduce you to a new pilot. And they say, hey, by the way, it'd be great if you fall in love with this guy for the good of mankind. And you say, no, I won't fucking fall in love with this guy. I'm my own person. And then I do fall in love with him anyway because that's just the way it is. And fuck! And that's a whole section at the back of the book where it's like, yeah, you kind of have to constantly fuck to keep society going.
That,
you
none
kids.
Of that has to do with sex.
Fair. That's fair. It's a lot more about anguish. But realistically, it's implied that these kids are having sex to foster the next generation. There's no adults. In Monster Hearts, there's adults. Society
That's
keeps
worse because that means there's adults having sex with children.
No, I'm saying there's adults existing in the background. There's adults out there being like, hey, I'm a consenting adult. How about you? Me too. Would you like to exchange genetic information? Indeed. Fuck, fuck, fuck. And it all happens in the background. Sure, but it's happening, so you don't have to worry about it. You can sex moves in Monster Hearts, you can they're metaphoric. You can determine whether or not they're actually describing sex.
They're called sex moves, my dude.
It's been that way since fucking PBT, Actual Powered by the Apocalypse. And it's always been that they are called sex moves, but they don't necessarily have to describe the fact that your character is literally boning down.
And none of the powers in this have to do with having sex.
Except for getting to five intimacy. I mean, you can get away with it by being a brother you constantly fight with, too. But otherwise, to get to five intimacy with a stranger, you have to fuck them. To get to a five intimacy with your anchor.
Well, then they wouldn't be a stranger. Now, would they?
they would still be a teenager. To get to an intimacy five with your anchor, you have to fuck them. That is actually specifically mentioned in the what's it like to be an anchor section. They're
yeah,
like,
yeah, but
I'm saying, probably have sex with this guy. And I'm like, I don't really want to, but I guess I have to, so I have sex with him. That's how it is. Usually
you don't have to
happens.
Hit it. You don't have to go to five intimacy with anyone.
You know what? We're going to have a respectful disagreement of opinion on this one.
All I'm saying is I'm not trying to go to bat for Bliss Stage. I'm just saying I do see a little bit of hypocrisy in the sweet dear love of some things that deal with this. And it's not like this is, you know, a Cthulhu Tech level thing where it's like, yeah, and there's whole secret societies of, you know, kid rape. You're like, okay,
yeah,
that's
a lot of
not a thing in this.
In this game, it's mostly behind veils.
Like, and the thing is, all of it, while it's still kids, at least the whole thing is basically consenting children. Mm-hmm. Like, two 16-year-olds going, yeah, we want to bone down. Okay, it's not great to have a game where, like, two 30-year-old dudes are going like, yeah, let's bone down as these 16-year-olds.
That's the big thing you run into with this, where you're like, well, I mean, 16-year-olds do have sex with each other. Yes, at their own behest and volition. You don't mash them together like Barbie dolls.
there is definitely problematic nonsense here. I mean, do not get me wrong. Like I said, I'm not going to bat for the game. Yeah. I'm just saying.
It's a fraught issue.
It is a very weird.
If they could hold themselves to fraught, it'd be way less of an issue.
If I could just get to 5 intimacy on fraught. Yeah, I think it's a very weird, interesting conversation that isn't one that we are going to be having at the tail end of a podcast.
I don't know that necessarily we're the right people to have that conversation anyway. We're not game designers.
We're not 16.
Yeah, so I'm sure that there are better people out there who have already argued this to a logical conclusion, and they're going to be commenting on our
And this is one of the times where I actually am really going to welcome people's thoughts on this, because normally when we put out an episode and someone's like, I have an issue with what you said, I'm like, I don't give a fuck.
Also, I forgot what you're talking
about. Yeah, also, they're like, hey, you know when you said this? And I go, no, I do not.
Do you know how much content we make?
Do you know how many shows I put out all the time? If you say, hey, it turns out that actually in 1971, this film came out in July instead of August, I'll be like, I give no fucks and don't know what you're talking
about.
It's
even worse when they just reference the episode number. They're like, in episode 104, you said this and that's wrong. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. What are you talking about?
But this is definitely something where, especially any game creators, anyone like that, I would definitely love to hear thoughts on what it is and how something like sexuality, especially in these sort of problematic margins, is mm-hmm. used, and how you either, you know, deal with it or do not deal with it at all.
Yeah. Well, anyway, John, why don't we wrap this up before anyone says anything stupider than we've already said?
Ah, sure. I don't want to get to the point where I'm saying real bad nonsense. End the podcast early or record long enough to become the villain.
What's your favorite thing about this game?
My favorite thing about this game is the collaborative nature of the storytelling sort of within the game.
Mm-hmm.
The way that every single character is almost assuredly going to be another player rather than the GM is very interesting to me.
Yeah, that is neat.
I mean, in the same way that when we were reviewing Panty Explosion and it had like, oh, your best friend gets to do whatever and your rival gets to do this.
Yeah, that was a neat idea too.
So having like other players be judges on things and them be the side characters, it's a very interesting way to make sure that even if you're not involved in something, you're involved in it.
I'm always a fan of encouraging players to participate so that there aren't long periods of silence while one person's doing everything.
Yeah. And that's interesting. Honestly, I'll go ahead and say one of my least favorite things in this.
Please go ahead and take least favorite as well. Fire away.
Because along with that, it really feels like there's not a lot for the GM to do in this.
Yeah, and there's not a lot of concrete there when it comes to this game. It's like buying a self-help book. It's like, hey, you got to do all this.
Yeah, the GM role is basically just, I come up with a mission, I play the authority figure, and other than that, they mostly just sit back and watch the players play the game,
mm-hmm.
which I feel gets the exact opposite of your normal problem of the GM is 50 million characters and you're playing one. And if one person decides to go run off and do something and talk to like 3 town guardsmen, then it's just the GM talking to you in 3 voices while everyone else looks at them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this, it's much more like, oh yeah, your 4 players are sitting around having a discussion and the GM is just like, I am also here at the table.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess I'll do my favorite and least favorite too then.
Go for it. I don't think that's my least favorite, but I definitely think.
Oh, would you like me to come back to you with least favorite again?
No, that's fine.
I can, John. I'd be happy.
That's fine.
All right. Well, here's my favorite.
Great.
My favorite thing in this game is that you don't even have stats. All you have is relationships to other characters. I thought that was a really neat way to get that accomplished, that maybe your characters don't need stats constantly defined to actually just interact with the world. If your character's dumb, you don't need necessarily a numerical value to indicate how dumb for everyone else. You could just play them dumb.
Yeah, I do like the statless way that this goes through with characters where you're like, oh no, I don't have to worry about like, well, do I have enough strength to do a whatever? What's my damage calculate? You're like, no, man, all that matters is your relationships with people, and that informs the game play. Like, mechanics to inform play is very heavy in this.
Now, my least favorite thing in this game is Actually, it's going to be the one thing the DMs get to do. No, because we've talked the whole rampant child sex thing to death, and I feel like we can probably move past it and just let other people tell us whether it's right or wrong. Fine. The one thing the GMs get to do is at the end of mission actions during the finale rolls, they get to be mean to the players. They get to go, haha, I'm going to nominate your nightmare because that's where you're currently weak, and you have to put extra dice there just to stay alive. And it's like, why does this normally very collaborative storytelling game suddenly turn weirdly antagonistic with what, where one guy who has been doing nothing for this past several minutes pops up and is like, fuck you, buddy, that's my word on the subject, and now I'll be quiet again.
Yeah, it's especially bad because the GM has so little to do with the game.
Yeah.
That when you look at it and you're like, oh, all this dude does is give us missions and then try to fuck us on missions. You're like, I feel like this is very antagonistic, but it's not trying to be. It's just that's the only thing he can do to interact with you,
yeah,
is give you penalties based on trauma.
Yeah, so while John's complaint, rightfully so, is that the DM doesn't have a lot to do in this game, I'm going to go ahead and say that the one thing they do really have to do in this game is weirdly, needlessly mean.
True.
So, okay, there you have it. And John, you already said what you're leaving for thinking. This last opportunity, train's leaving the station. Chugga, chugga, chugga.
Nah, I'm good. Okay. I'll stick with what I've got.
Would you play this game?
That's, I feel like I probably would. Like, just the concept of, like, pilots that go into a dreamscape with, you know, mechs made out of their personal relationships. Like, it's a very interesting, evocative setting.
Yeah.
And I feel like that would be a thing that would be interesting to explore. I just, you know, wouldn't want to get into the whole child sex thing. For my campaign, it'd be like, no, you can get to a 5 without sex, that's fine.
Yeah, although that's a lot like saying Irreversible is a great movie if you take out the 9-minute rape scene. but
the book does say you can kind of change things, because it even says technically, if you just met a random stranger at a party, had sex, and left, you're going to be at intimacy 1 because that sex didn't mean anything. So they say this is just sort of a list of what possibly it could be, not a hard and fast rule.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. So in terms of this game, would you, could you, with all its faults, would you, could you, with consenting adults? John's going to say probably yes.
Probably, yeah. I would at least want to see how a game like this plays out.
Yeah.
How about you, my man?
I feel like I'm going to...
I mean, I know that for you, the whole collaborative sit around and tell a story thing is not exclusively your jam.
It's not specifically my jam, no. Which is weird, because I was just about to say a sentence I never thought I'd say, which is, it's not so much the child sex that I... and then I ran through that sentence in my head... warning lights came down. Someone hit a big button that was under a little glass bubble.
No, stop speaking. Halt tongue. Abort. Abort sentence.
Red loud klaxons and red spinny lights going off in my head. He's about to say something horrible.
No, pull up. Pull up.
No, but the truth is, I'm... Well, I like those types of storytelling experiences as collaborative exercises. Like, we've talked about this a bunch of times on the show before. When our friend Russ and you and I ran through a big old Marvel Superheroes game where we never rolled any dice.
No, we just sort of decided what happens based on what was going on.
Yeah, and I was playing like a genteel god of owls.
Yeah, I was just a southern gentleman. Like, hey, tell me why this would happen. Oh, yeah. Because I'm a cool dude with this power. Great,
yeah.
Cool.
Then I guess it was like you had a speedboat race and all this other stuff. It was fully collaborative, and we kept passing the reins over who was in charge of what.
Yeah.
And that's so that kind of thing can be fun, but it's also the kind of thing where you've got to really sell it to me that your book is worth the money.
For the thing for me, it's really I've got to have the right group of people. Bliss Stage is not a game I would ever recommend or want to see in, say, a convention list. That's not a thing where I want fucking 6 randos getting together to do.
Yeah, I don't want to see a shit like a play-by-post being assembled of Bliss Stage on, like, something awful.
No, this is a game where I'm like, oh, if you have a group of close friends, people that are like, yeah, we understand going into this what it's about, and we want to be able to do a collaborative story, and we even like the idea of like these vulnerable interludes where we can get very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way this game would shine.
Yeah.
And if you try and do that with just any Yahoo that comes to the table.
Well, here's the problem. It's a balancing act, because at the same time, I don't want to play this game with yokels and strangers. I also don't, I can't think of a single group of friends I'd feel comfortable in approaching and be like, hey, group of good friends who I trust implicitly, let's play this game. There's a lot of 14-year-old vaginas in it.
See, and that's just you selling it that way.
It doesn't matter if I sell that first or if it comes up later on. It still exists within the game. Like, that's the balancing act, is it's a really weird group of friends you're thinking of, and I'm not sure I have those friends or any friends.
What I'm saying is, you go in and you go, hey guys, here's the pitch. It's like teenage mech pilots.
Here's the big obvious asterisk.
No, man, you go, hey, it's a pitch. You're teenage mech pilots, and everyone's in, like, horrible Monster Hearts-esque fraught emotional relationships. And that's it. That's what you pitch. You don't go, by the way, if anybody wants to get a sexy time
going. I guess in that case, you could just straight up use Monster Hearts and just change some of the moves in the game into mecha moves and call it a day.
Nah, man, you can't. You're not changing my move into a mecha move. What are you, high?
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a little stoned right now.
I got like 6 different kinds of blood pressure meds in me. Some of them have to be doing something.
Some of them got to fuck me up somehow.
Yeah. So anyway, there you have it. It's I might play it if a theoretical group of friends existed and someone made a lot of changes to it first. Otherwise, this is an at arm's length with tweezers game for me. there you have it. That's Bliss Stage.
That is Bliss Stage. It is a contentious game.
Indeed, it is a land of contrasts. In summation, I hope you enjoyed hearing Bliss Stage.
I hope I have presented my 3 points to you correctly. Firstly, I've presented you the game. Second, I told you about how it existed in a world. And third, I had a conclusion of where it will stand with me and my friends. Thank you for listening. Webster's defines a conclusion as...
Good Lord. Oh, that's the word. Now for my bibliography. I read Bliss Stage.
I read Bliss Stage. Also, nothing ever else.
Yeah.
I can't read anything but RPGs now. They have consumed my life, and I'm falling into a pit of RPGs.
It's true. I feel like every year when we hit the anniversary, which is like in August or something, where we're like, oh, we've been doing the show for 6 years, however many years, all I can think is, when was the last time I read a novel?
And the answer is... only for one of our other shows.
That's right. What if I read a non-Star Wars novel? When's the last time that happened?
When's the last time I sat down with like a good, solid novel and read that? Not even like, ooh, I'm reading some real like Thomas Pynchon shit. I'm talking about sitting down and reading like some Terry Pratchett, anything, just even light.
Just
girl,
like, when was the last time I read The Restaurant at the End of the Universe? I was 19. It hurts, John.
Oh, I bought a Terry Pratchett book that I had not read, and it has sat in my room for, I'm going to say, a year and a half now.
Oh, okay,
because well. I have not been able to read anything.
I do appreciate at least that you didn't buy it, like, say, 6 years ago, which means the book has been sitting in your room through the death of Terry Pratchett.
Oh, God, that would be real sad for me.
So, anyway... thank you so much for listening. Don't listen to our whining. We're fine. We're happy people.
Everything's great. But you know, if you want to help turn our frowns upside down,
mm-hmm.
you can support us on Patreon.
Patreon.com/systemmastery is the way to do that.
And if you subscribe at any level, you get bonus content for this a here show.
That's right. For only a single dollar an episode, which adds up to about $2 a month, you get bonus content for this show where we make characters. God, I don't even know how we're going to do that this time.
Are we making 13 characters? What's going on here?
We're making 13-year-old characters. That's what's going on.
No, I'm not. I'm making 17-year-old characters. Lot of them.
All my characters are 17, and also the age of consent where we live is 17.
Also, we all live in, I don't know what, Georgia? Sure.
Also, everyone's a 12,000-year-old dragon, actually.
All of my characters are 18 years old. Thank you. None of them have succumbed to Bliss yet.
Yeah, okay.
Also, they got smokes.
Also, they can go to porno theaters.
They can get porn and smokes for the rest of the kids.
Oh, that's great. What a good buddy that is.
Hell yeah, that 18-year-old who's like, here you go, I got you a porno mag.
And oh, like, oh, thanks, man. Mister. Normally we can't loot the parts of the stores. What's behind the beaded curtains?
Oh, jeez, mister, I'm 7 years old and I want to see twitties. Conway twitties.
Of course you do, son, because your mom fell asleep when she turned 19. Oh, by the way, are you still lactating off her?
Yeah. Awfully, oh, yes, we.
She still makes a lot of milk, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know how this works if you fall asleep while you're lactating.
I mean, if breast milk is still available off lactating women, that's another source of great stuff out of sleeping people.
Now we're just going straight into fucking Mad Max territory.
That's true. We really are. Anyway, that was a horrible tangent, and I apologize. Why not give us $1 a month and I'll stop it? I promise.
I promise 100% if you listening right now, give us $1 per month.
Episode.
Per month episode.
Per episode. Two a month.
Per monthly episode.
There you go.
Per bi-monthly episode.
Twice a month. Then
bi-monthly.
Then I'll stop it.
And by bi-monthly, I mean 2 times a month.
That's right. Not once every two months. Yeah. There's also other levels you can support us at. There's a $2 level that unlocks a lot of Star Wars content, and a $5 level that unlocks a
monthly content
that's very exclusive. So find us at patreon.com/systemmastery and give us that money.
And you can go to our Discord. If you're a patron, you get to unlock special colors, special rooms, all sorts of nonsense. Find us on Twitter. We got our pinned tweet as the Discord. Join us on there. We got a whole real super good fan base in there. All friendly people. I love them all to death.
They're great.
I don't talk a lot in there, but know that I'm always lurking.
Yeah, he's one of those I turn myself invisible and I just read the shit in there.
It always looks like I'm offline, but I'm not. I'm watching. I see what you do. I'm like Jesus watching you masturbate.
Which means if you are in there, you can quit sending me summon messages whenever you want to talk to John. Just do it to him. He's there.
Oh, I'm always
there. He's just hiding from you.
I just don't have anything to say to you, you peons,
oh,
you lesser beings.
Hang on, these are people that we're currently trying to
court.
Yeah, so let's be nice to them, shall we? Anyway, that's our Patreon, patreon.com/systemmastery, or you can just find our regular website, systemmastery.
A regular website.
A regular website,
it's
mister.
Systemmasterypodcast.com.
Yes, .kwomm.
Ooh.
Stop on by and check us out. Thank you so much for listening. You have a wonderful week.